stop to wonder why it's so easy to create our ideal RPG characters, but so difficult to create our ideal selves? If you want to become just as confident and empowered in real life as your D&D character is at the table, join me for my brand new Identi-D&D Life Coaching Workshop. I use the character building framework from D&D for a casual but really effective way to identify what's holding you back from being the best version of yourself. Listen in at the end of the episode to learn more.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
We are back for another episode of The Compendium, another episode talking about races, and this week we are going to dive into gnomes.
Gnomes, yes, everyone's favorite crazy uncle of D&D fantasy races.
Yeah, you know, I think this one's good because for some reason, my mind feels like gnomes and halflings share a lot of commonalities, and in some respects they do, but they also are very unique. And so I think it'll be fun to parse apart, like, what sets them apart from some of the other races, especially some of the other, like, curious races or some other things in this episode.
Yeah. So here's, like, where they meet with halflings. They're both small, both traditionally speaking and also mechanically speaking. They both have a love for life, and they are also both longer lived than, say, humans are. But where they differ, though, is that there's an exuberance to gnomes that halflings just don't have, right? Because we talked about how halflings are like home and hearth, a good meal and friends and family and community and that kind of stuff. Whereas gnomes have ADD, right? Like gnomes are like the Doc Brown of D&D, like just frantic, excitable, discovering new things, and just like there's this joie de vivre that's very excitable when it comes to gnomes. That's a lot different than you would see in the halflings, I think.
Right. And I think the crossover for me was that element with halflings that we talked about of like the curiosity, but with gnomes, it's like dialed up to 10, where it's right. Not just a curiosity. It's like an incessant, I must know more. I must experience this. This is amazing. Whereas halflings are like, oh, what? How curious. You know, they're like you said, they're more British. Like, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to know more.
Yeah. I would say that like the gnomes, if you have to put it to a country, is more like the Australians, right? Where it's just like, yeah, Australians are crazy. But like, because Australians, like their whole continent's trying to kill them. Like literally everything. Literally everything is trying to kill them on that godforsaken piece of land. It's beautiful, don't get me wrong. But like, I mean, but so they're a little like just like 3 degrees crazy, and it's beautiful, it's wonderful. But so what you get is this crazy thing where they live almost as long as elves, have the curiosity of the halflings dialed up to 11, the crafting ability in a certain vein of the dwarves, and the kind of drive of humans. So they're the most extreme elements of all of the races kind of force into one very compact package. So it's really, really interesting, actually.
Right. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation. So why don't we just start by let's talk about kind of their background, the history of gnomes, where you come from or what your lineage represents, or, you know, some of those different aspects that have brought you your character as a gnome to where they are in the world today.
Yeah. So generally speaking, gnomes are fairly common, much like halflings are. They're kind of going to make up a decent portion of any kind of like large city like Waterdeep or something. But like halflings, they're kind of the second tier, you know what I mean? Like you're going to find elves, dwarves, humans everywhere you go. And then more likely than not, halflings and gnomes. And gnomes are also, they usually have large families. and they live in either communities of their own or as part of larger communities in larger cities. And it's interesting, the Player's Handbook talks about like when a gnome is named, that they're given names by like literally everyone in the family. And some of them stick, some of them don't, but the names can come from like the mom, the dad, the clan elder, the aunts, the uncles, and the nicknames that everyone else uses. And they have to learn how to like pare it down when they're around other, as they say, quote unquote, stuffy races, and only use three names instead of the 17. Like it's like my friends here in New Mexico who are Hispanic or Latin, and they have like five middle names, right? Mm-hmm. But they just go by the first and last. And so it's very much like that. And so it seems like there's very close-knit communities as well, but not the hierarchy that you have from the dwarves, a bit more, you know, akin to how the halflings are. But everything that they do is really punctuated by this exuberance, by this kind of passion for life, that even though they live a really long time, they always have this feeling, or it looks like they have this feeling, that even that many centuries isn't going to be enough for them to do everything they want to do. And so they are pretty outgoing. They will invite people in, great hospitality. They're respected by other races. They treat other races well. There's not this like distrust that you might see in some of the other ones. So yeah, they're generally well accepted. I think the only thing that kind of holds them back is kind of the erraticness of it all. Like, do you remember that scene in The Neverending Story where Atreyu is going to the Sphinx and there's that crazy guy in like the pulley bucket thing?
Oh yeah.
Like that's a gnome, like down to the bald head, crazy beard, and the excited talking, and he's got like a telescope he made and the pulley system he did, and like that's a gnome, like really quintessentially when it comes to like D&D. And I think if people picture that or go back and watch that movie, you'll get a really good idea of that.
Right. And I just like the fact that they're all about like having a good time in life. Like that, I feel like that is what they sum up to, is everything that they do is all about doing as much as they can to have a great time in life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. But it's not about like hedonism. It's about learning new things, trying new things, inventing new things, especially because they're kind of known as the clockwork inventors of most D&D worlds. And so little clockwork inventions and clocks, bombs, steampunk stuff, that's very much them. Before the artificer class was introduced, the gnomes were the ones who would kind of be responsible for all that kind of stuff.
Right. I think it's interesting. I mean, that makes sense. Like when you're going into how they live, like it even says that their houses are kind of like very cleverly constructed. They're usually a little bit camouflaged, but that's very interesting with the whole they want to experience everything. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I would think like they'd kind of be up on the hilltop with the neon signs that say, come visit us and tell us all of your stories because we want to know it all. But they're kind of like this mix of like, we're kind of tiny. You know, there's dangerous stuff out there, but I still want to know about the dangerous stuff. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so like they have some natural, you know, magical ability, unlike the halflings. So they will use illusions and, you know, kind of camouflage or like, you know, secret doors to hide their dwelling places. But they're not uber secretive typically and kind of hiding out by themselves like some of the halflings can be. So they'll still be part of larger societies, but that kind of obscurity and camouflage is more localized to their particular house or domicile.
Do gnomes tend to live, do they tend to live in communities of other gnomes? Or is it usually like a family that lives somewhere? Or are they in like, you know, I don't want to say like gnome cities, but they're clusters of gnome families that are all kind of tend to
to band together.
Yeah, that's not as well-defined, but okay. It does seem that they would have entire, like, towns or villages of gnomes. You know, grand cities, perhaps not, although that would be phenomenal. But you could see them either way. You could see them in their own settlements or as part of a larger, like, human culture or integrated culture, like at Waterdeep or Neverwinter or something like that.
Makes sense. Yeah, and I also like in here how, like, it kind of, in the Player's Handbook, how it kind of references that other races recognize the value that gnomes bring to the table with their exuberance, their curiosity. One of the things it mentions in here specifically is that humans tend to retain a gnome for several generations of, like, tutoring.
Yes, which is
because
awesome.
Because not only do they have a lot of information, but they're just a lot of fun to be around and very excited about life. Yeah. And so it's kind of cool. I like the thread that I'm pulling out of there. Like, other races really recognize this really special something about gnomes that maybe doesn't exist in any other race, which is why they really want to, like, you know, work with them or, you know, kind of be a part of what they have to offer. It's like that one really good friend that you have that always makes you laugh and tells jokes and, like, is the light of the party. It's like, yes. You always kind of want to be around them because you just feel like you're in a good mood whenever they're around.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, too. Like, and that hits part of, like, your earlier question is, like, yeah, they're not going to be, like, their own, like, kind of sequestered you know, villages or settlements like the halflings might, because they want to know everything and they're excited and like being around people. And there's that energy. You can't hide that off in a corner somewhere. It's not going to work. But also at the same time, gnomes almost require a level of sophistication to see their value, right? Like, because they're intelligent and they make great teachers and inventors and things, they work well with a, you know, a moderately advanced society that has culture and schools and libraries and places where you can go and learn magic and that kind of stuff. Because of the core races we've talked about so far, they don't offer a immediate value on a very, very base level. Like, right? Like, humans, they're ambitious. Great. Elves are, you know, they're great with bows and they have magic. Dwarves are hardy and strong and make great weapons. Halflings are sneaky and quiet. Like, you all can see, like, in a very, like, you know, Conan the Barbarian kind of way, where things aren't sophisticated or to a level of complication. Like, what do you do with a gnome? They can't fight. They can't sneak. They can't do magic the way you want them to do. But as soon as you start having civilization, they're incredibly advantageous. And so it makes a lot of sense. That's why they aren't more, I don't know, of a prodigious and dominating race in most fantasy settings, because they kind of really shine once you get to that middling to high tier of a fantasy culture.
Mm-hmm. So what are you, we've mentioned a couple already, but let's maybe list a couple of, I don't want to say personality traits, but behaviors or ways that gnomes might talk if you're really wanting to get into the role-playing aspect of diving into a gnome, because I feel like there's so much there to work with this race in particular. You know, we talked about they're basically going to talk as fast as they can because their mouth can't keep up with their thoughts. I know they like to make jokes, like play pranks, because mm-hmm. again, it's all about let's have a great time, let's experience, let's have fun. What are some of the other, like, if you're wanting to really dive into the role play, what are some, if again, stereotypical maybe, and you could do what you wanted, but what are some springboard points for gnomish type behaviors? Yeah.
So when they do speak, they are energetic and talk very, very quickly, probably using their hands a lot, but they still have the ability to listen to other people because they want to learn things. And so if you want, like, some cultural touchstone points of, like, in like movies, films, and TV, books, that kind of thing, to kind of go, oh, they're kind of like this. A few great ones would be Doc Brown from the Back to the Future series. Mm-hmm. I think, like we said before, in Neverending Story, just outside the Sphinx, there's that man and wife that live there. I think in Princess Bride, Miracle Max is pretty good.
Yeah.
He looks like one. He's just too tall for it. But if he was a tinkerer, like, that's perfect. Also, I really love in the TV show Alias with Jennifer Gardner, there is their like gadget guy. His name is Marshall.
Oh, yeah, Marshall.
Marshall is perfect for this. He even talks quick, gets off subject, realizes that that's not playing in the room, and then gets back to the thing. But what he makes is amazing. And he's just a really friendly, nice guy with not a bit of malice or deceit in him. And so Marshall is a great touchstone point as well, I think, personality wise.
And all of these traits really culminate very nicely to the call of adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can just pick your poison when you're trying to decide how your little gnome character decided to go off on adventures, because, oh my gosh, it could have been they saw a shiny thing in the road and wanted to know where it came from. Or, like, I mean, you could just pick anything almost out of that state of just excitement and curiosity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they're risk takers, right? Like, at their core, that's where that kind of human element comes in. Unlike some of the other races we've talked about, they'll take risks, and sometimes very foolhardy risks, to kind of accomplish their sometimes inscrutable goals. But yeah, like, they're the ultimate risk takers. They'll jump down the hole first. They'll go with you into the cavern of doom in the hopes of finding this one thing they're looking for, no problem. So yeah, I think risk and knowledge and joy and excitement are really kind of the key words to keep in mind when role-playing a gnome.
With all that information under our belt, let's dive into the mechanics of gnomes. So gnome traits, you know, some of what you get as a character when you decide to play a gnome.
Right. So gnomes are one of those that do have sub-races. So this is just the stock build, the straight from the factory build,
right,
for gnomes before you choose your sub-race. But
your base model.
Yeah, this is the base model. This is the factory setting. The ability score increase, your intelligence score goes up by 2, which is great because I don't think there's a ton of like core races that do that for intelligence. Lending itself towards wizards, because it's the only class that just needs to have intelligence before we got the artificer, which is now really great and works so seamlessly, wonderfully well with gnomes. Mm-hmm. So your intelligence score goes up by 2. And then age, they mature about the same rate as humans. And they're kind of considered adults, though, around like 40. But
that sounds about right for millennials.
Yeah, well, or old Gen Xers like myself. But they also can live 350 to 500 years. And what do we say? The elves could live like 7 to 1,000, something like that, about 10 times. So they're one of the longer lived races, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
And then for alignment, typically they're going to be good with leaning towards chaos. But I think they also could learn towards law as well because of the systematic way of of like building. But it does seem like their building process is a little bit chaotic. So I think with that excitability and the risk taking and the pranks and things that they like to play as part of their personality.
Reminds me a little chaotic bit of the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland.
A little bit, but not quite so
there's a very
so
clear system to the tea party.
Oh, yes.
But what on earth is it?
Yeah. So working with a gnome is like playing a game of Flux, where you're just like, all right, I guess these are the rules now. So alignment. And again, remember, alignment is there for to help you, not for you to slave under it. So use it as you will.
I think it's important to mention, too, in the player's handbook, it specifically calls out that it's really rare for gnomes to be malicious.
Yeah.
By nature. And so I think if you did want to play a character that's more on the evil side, or your character ends up leaning that direction as you are playing, to really think through what could have been so terrible or so grievous about their experiences that would have swayed them to that mindset, because it's really, really untypical to see that.
It would be really, and I mean, honestly, it'd be awesome for some great role play. Like, what could break a gnome? Like, that's a story I want to hear. That sounds awesome. So yeah, but if yeah, if you're typically the grim dark edgelord person, maybe not gnomes. Although you're welcome to try. That sounds rad. Then size between 3 and 4 feet tall, average about 40 pounds. Their size is small.
Is that the same as halflings?
Yeah, just about. I think
so. Halflings, they're not smaller than, they're kind of like eye to eye with halflings. Yeah. If you're trying to visualize it.
Yeah,
I thought gnomes were smaller for some reason.
Yeah, I'll have to look and see, but I think they're pretty comparable when it comes to halflings. I'm going to look right now. Then, of course, their speed is going to be 25, like most...
Short little legs.
Yeah, short little legs, like most small races and dwarves. Yeah, so halflings are about 3 feet tall, so gnomes could be a bit taller.
Interesting.
But the weight is about the same.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, and they also have dark vision, which is nice. So they can see up to 60 feet in dark in darkness, shades of gray as usual.
What about their race grants them the dark vision? Because I know with certain characters, it's like, oh, they grew up in the Underdark or something like that. So would you say about their history would give them that particular trait? Because that seems a little bit out of character. If they're out adventuring, having fun, exploring, like how would that kind of have evolved over time?
Right. And we didn't really dive into this earlier, but they are typically subterranean creatures, but not like the dwarves, more like the halflings. So they're not going to build giant towers. They're going to have homes built into like berms and caves and things. And so they do like to be underground, but they don't stay underground as long as dwarves do. They're not as, you know, agoraphobic as those might be. But they do tend to enjoy living underground as opposed to, you know, up in the air in a high rise building or something.
Right.
And then they have gnome cunning, so they get advantage on all intelligence, wisdom, and charisma saving throws against magical effects.
That's pretty darn good.
It is really good. Again, if you're going to play them as a wizard, that's phenomenal. Because they're just elusive and erratic. And then, of course, they can speak common and gnomish. And gnomish uses the same dwarven script for a lot of the same reasons.
Right. So, I mean, like you said, if you're playing a gnome, you're erring on the side of essentially knowledge. Like, that's where your heavily weighted is the intelligence as well as the likable charisma side. So that's kind of where a lot of these traits are coming in.
Yes, exactly.
So let's layer up our base model. Let's upgrade our base model to some of our sub races. And there's two, actually kind of three, sub races as written. And so let's just kind of go through the first two, which are the most common ones, starting with forest gnome.
Right. So now we have gnome FE model, the forest model, to go with our extended car analogy. And I don't get cars at all.
We can carry this.
Yeah, exactly. So forest gnomes are the ones who are a bit more shy. Right. All the normal stuff still applies, but they're the ones who are going to be more hidden because they're very small and live in the wilderness as opposed to cities and industry and clockwork making and all that kinds of stuff. And so they're going to be living in harmony with nature, living, you know, under the roots of trees and caves they've built there or dens they've built there. And they really rely on their kind of being like nimble and quick and hidden and some innate magic to keep themselves kind of safe. And so for them, they get an additional ability score increase to their dexterity, which is nice. So +2 to their intelligence and a +1 to their dexterity. And then they also have some natural magic. They have natural illusionist, which means they just, at the very beginning, they know the minor illusion cantrip. And and the intelligence is the spellcasting ability for that. And then they also, which is really fun, they get speak with small beasts, which is kind of fun. And what it is that basically through like hand signs and little sounds, they can communicate simple ideas with small or smaller beasts. Forest gnomes love animals and often keep squirrels, badgers, rabbits, moles, woodpeckers, and other creatures as beloved pets.
Squeak, squeakum.
Yes, thank you. You owe me. You've stolen my acorn. Squeak, squeaker, squeaker. You owe him an acorn. Yeah, exactly. That's totally it. Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
How could I not? I mean, I was just thinking, like, the role-playing for that. As a DM, I would totally be like, okay, show me.
Yeah. Oh, you speak like, small beasts? Show me then.
Speak small Let's beast and show me these, like, hand gestures and the noises that you're making to this chipmunk trying to ask it which way the talking llama went.
Which way the talking llama go? Yeah, exactly. I also love the idea that badgers count, and I'm like, a badger's strong enough to carry a mounted rider into combat or to flee, right? I just love an idea of a forest gnome riding the back of a badger and just like, escaping through the trees. I think that's brilliant.
So my first thought with forest gnome is that they'd be a really good companion to a druid, but then I was wondering, actually, maybe they wouldn't, because you'd be kind of nullifying some of the magical spells that you might get organically from the druid race. And so I'm wondering if the forest gnome, as much as it seems like a really clear crossover with something like a druid, would actually be better served aligning with a different class, because have like doubled up on spells that you can actually use twice.
Right. But that's the thing, is that even though a druid has access to spells like speak with animals, being able to speak to them naturally on, you know, just anytime you feel like it is great, because you're
stacking
things.
That's true. You're not using a spell.
And yeah, you're right. There's a little overlap, but it doesn't have to be all about efficiencies. That flavor is really great too, but they could just be, you know, a ranger or a rogue or something else.
They could be a Disney princess and be a bard and then sing to all of their animal friends.
How do you do that? That's amazing. That's perfect. I absolutely love it. Wow. Wow. That's
the way that my brain works. I can't help it.
So good. Oh, it could be like Brave, and they could be a druid anyway, and they can just turn into a bear as well.
There you go.
Now there's so many options. This is great. Forest gnomes are the best. And then do you want to do rock gnome as well?
Yeah, let's dive into... So which one of these would you say is the most common type of gnome to see? I know that forest gnomes are common, even though they might be rare, which sounds a little counterintuitive. There's lots of them out there. You're just not likely to see many of them, which I think is the concept there.
Exactly. They like their privacy a bit more than most. Rock gnomes are definitely the more common because they really lean into the tinkering and invention elements that kind of loom large in the description for gnomes in general. And so they're the most common ones you're going to see in a variety of settings. And by the way, when I just said rock gnome, I was like, wait, okay, so a gnome that has like Kiss makeup and a like a steampunk guitar because they're a rock gnome. Sorry, we're getting too many great ideas out of this episode, I think.
We really are. So, if anybody makes one of these characters based off of the ideas, please, please, please let us know.
Yes, please.
I would love to see that character sheet. Okay, so yeah, rock gnomes are probably going to be the most common. You'll see them the most frequently, especially these are the ones that are going to like populate the cities, like you said. Yeah. They're not going to be hidden away in the forest. These are who you're going to see hanging out with the halflings and the elves in the big cities.
Right, exactly. And these are the ones that are going to be really great for that like generations long tutor for a noble human family or something. So they get an ability score increase of 1 to their constitution. So they're a bit hardier, mostly to survive the failed experiments that they work on.
I like that.
That's how I think of it. Then they have Artificer's Lore. So whenever you make an intelligence history check related to a magic item, alchemical objects, or technological devices, you can double your proficiency bonus. You can add your proficiency bonus twice, basically, instead of any bonus you would apply normally. So
can you parse that apart? There's a lot of big words in that.
Yeah,
can you give
us
like an example of when that would apply in like a role play or something so that it's a little bit easier to digest so we don't have to think quite as hard to understand what that's saying can do?
So let's say you've got a rock gnome wizard and they come across a door that's mechanically held through a series of gears and levers and things, and they're like, which lever do we pull? They would get to go up and they would make an intelligence history check. And if they're proficient in history, let's say they've got a +3 because of their intelligence, and then they have a +2 because of their proficiency, they would add another +2. So now instead of rolling at a 5, they're rolling at a 7 to figure out what the heck this thing is and make sure they don't pull the wrong lever.
Okay, that's helpful. Wrong lever! Why do we even have that lever? How many times have we brought that up in this? Oh my gosh. Like, it's just applicable to everything.
It's so good.
Cool. That helps, like, sort that a little bit better into, like, real-life playing terms.
Yes, exactly. And then they have the tinker ability, which basically means that when they have a tinker's tools, which is one of the tool sets you can get with your background, when you use it, you can spend an hour of work and about 10 gold pieces worth of materials and make a tiny clockwork device. And they give a couple of listings of what they can do. Now, the device only works for about 24 hours unless you kind of keep it going, basically winding it back up, greasing the gears, all that kind of stuff, infusing some magic into it perhaps. You can use your action to dismantle it and kind of harvest the parts and use those parts to make something else later. And you can only have three of those devices going at one time. There's three options. There's a clockwork toy. So this is like a little like clockwork animal. Think Energizer Bunny, you know, ting, 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 ting. You place it on the ground. It can move 5 feet around and goes in random directions and makes a noise appropriate. So that's just like a child's toy or something really great to grab the attention of the monster in the dungeon while the rest of the party sneaks around to flank it or to bypass the thing it was guarding, mm-hmm. which is kind of a fun
like application. Like a surprise attack maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's looking at this little thing and it's like, what the heck is this? And then everyone's like, surprise! And then there's a fire starter. It's a little device that produces flame. So basically, they can make a Zippo. They got to make it lighter. Which, if they are a wizard already, they can just produce flame or a druid or it's prestidigitation does this. It's a cool idea. I don't know how mechanically strong mm-hmm. it is, but I like it. A music box, when opened, it plays a single song at moderate volume and then it'll stop, or if you close the lid, it stops doing the music.
So these are really niche, and like offhand, yeah. The only thing I can think of that these would be applicable for is, like we said, in combat as some sort of distraction, or potentially as like a gift to somebody to try to like pass a persuasion or like a charisma, especially the toy, be like, oh, look, I made this. I will give it to you if you let us into this building or something like that. But it's going to stop working in 24 hours. And so maybe that could come back to bite you.
Do you want to know my like devious version of this?
I would love to know your devious version of this.
So my devious version of this requires our gnome, rock gnome, to be a wizard. And so you're in a dungeon and they open the box and it starts playing music. The monster or monsters hopefully gather around. And the song basically is a song that says, you're a bunch of fools because today I prepared explosive runes. And they look inside the box and then there's the magic runes that explode when read and the whole thing explodes. So that's what I would do. So there's always an advantage of grouping monsters in a very specific, predictable place for your nefarious means. Yeah. So
I think this would also be like really good for players who think very strategically or creatively with how can I use this object in a unique or interesting way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they're meant to be used as presented necessarily. They're meant to be like, okay, here's this strange little thing. Figure out something cool to do with it.
Right. Think about Thieves Cant. Think about like maybe there's a very specific song that means something to members of a Thieves Guild. Right. And you could just be at the bar and just like open it up and it plays a couple of notes and you close it. And the guy at the end of the bar looks up at you and you look at him and he winks and you're like, all right, got it. You know, you know now. You're like, the heck did you just do, man? Don't worry about it. I'll tell you later. So like I could see a couple of really interesting ways. And the fact that these things are so limited and so well defined in what they can and can't do, I think in my mind that makes them more interesting to play with.
Right. Now, there's one last subrace of gnomes, probably the most uncommon. I would love if you would grace us with the official name of this, because I can't say that, but you say it so beautifully.
What, deep gnome? That's really easy to say.
Oh, come on.
Okay, so they're called deep gnomes, but also they're called Smurfeblin. Are they making
Smurfeblin?
Yes. Are they making a joke about Smurfs? They absolutely are. Although in French, the Smurfs are called les Trumps, so it's debatable. But anyway, these are gnomes from the Underdark. These guys are going to be very much like the Duergar we talked about with the dwarves. These are the purple, white-haired Underdark versions of that race. And so they are actually usually good aligned, even in the player in the monster manual. They're very, very kind of guarded and secretive, but they're just as intelligent and crafty as their above ground kin. But they are typically good guys for sure. And they also get ability score increase of dexterity for one. Now, this is one of the downsides. There's a couple of downsides, but they don't live as long as other gnomes do. They live about 200 to 250 years, as opposed to 350 to 500. Part of it is because their size is they're 3 to 3.5 feet tall and usually weigh 80 to 120 pounds, as you were pointing out to me before we started recording, Casey. I think the reason that their lives are so much shorter is heart disease.
Stop eating so much bacon.
Yeah, you can't just live on mushrooms, guys. Get a treadmill. Come on. So they're much more stout. I'm a little surprised that they have a +1 to their dexterity. Let's just say magic.
That's always the best answer when there's no good answer.
Yeah, magic. Exactly. A wizard did it. Yay. So that's the age. Size, again, 3 to 3.5, about a little lighter than humans. Size is still small. They have the same speed as normal. They have superior dark vision because they live almost exclusively underground or in the Underdark. And so they have dark vision out to 120 feet, which is kind of cool. And because of their kind of like purpley gray skin, they have something called stone camouflage. So they have advantage on dexterity stealth checks to hide in rocky terrain.
So they can just kind of like stand up against the rocks and not blink and hope nobody sees them.
Pretty much, yeah. And then languages, they know Common, Gnomish, and Undercommon, the language of the Underdark. It says here that the Smurfeblin dialect is more guttural than surface. I tripped all over that. Surface Gnomish, so they sound like Scottish or Germans, perhaps. They don't know, most of them don't know Common as well, but they learn enough to deal with outsiders. And to get by in like other lands and stuff. Now, what's interesting is they don't have sunlight sensitivity, which I find very, very interesting, nor do they have natural magic like some of the other ones would, which is what I would kind of think would happen, if especially when you look at the Duergar for the dwarves. And do you still have the Smurfeblin deep gnome listing for the monster manual up? Because I wonder if there's something lost in player character translation, as it were,
because these are also a monster. Like, you can, right. It's a playable race, but it's actually also in the monster manual.
So they
have innate spell casting.
They do. Non-detection, blindness, deafness, blur, and disguise self. I thought so. Yeah. Everything else is still there, and they don't have the sunlight sensitivity. Interesting. Okay. So I think that there could be a really great, precedent, if you want to argue with your DM, to maybe get some of these bi-level innate magical stuff. That'd be kind of neat. Maybe give up something else as a trade-off. But that's an interesting distinction between the two. So those are your three sub-races. You've got your deep gnomes, your rock gnomes, and your forest gnomes.
Now, we kind of sprinkled some of this throughout, but I like ending the race episodes with our wine and cheese pairing suggestions. So if you're going to play a gnome, what are some of your, maybe your top three picks for, I mean, you could do anything with them, but your top three picks for classes,
you really can.
That would be just a really nice parallel to what they already offer.
Right. If you're trying to find something that's going to go just really with the grain, as it were, wizards and artificers are obvious choices for that. As we talked about with the forest gnomes, something, as you said, like a bard, which is beautiful, or ranger or druid would be really great for those kinds of things. And then if you want to go against the grain, I think that anything that's going to be knowledge-based, like perhaps a cleric with the knowledge domain mm-hmm. or a cleric with nature domain, might be really interesting as well.
Yeah.
And I also like the idea that you put forward about the bard is a great idea, because let's go back to the tinkering ability. What if you have a music box and now you have your own musical accompaniment and you don't have to play any instruments?
Or you could even make yourself like a one-man band. Set up.
Oh, you're allowed to have three of those. One does harmony, one does melody, one does percussion, and then you just go, oh, that's genius. And you can have like one of those suitcases that like has the legs that come out and open the top, and you're just like singing on the street. Yeah, let's just do that. I have to go make another character. Thanks a lot, Casey.
Oh yeah, like you're that upset about it.
Not at all.
Awesome. So there are some awesome suggestions for you guys listening. If you are curious about playing a joyful, happy little gnome, there are some great ideas for you on how you can build that gnome character out. And also some knowledge on how that character is going to look once you start building that character sheet together.
Yeah. And could I just end with this real quick? I got an email from someone named Troy this week that says, I love the podcast, by the way. You guys have really helped me as a DM frame certain concepts for my players. It's been very helpful. I'm looking forward to when you guys eventually tackle puzzles and traps, and I'm trying to give my players a bit of everything, combat, social, puzzles, exploration, but balancing how to make encounters dangerous or high stakes and not killing everyone or putting an impossible wall in front of them is tricky. Kind regards, Troy.
Aw, thank you, Troy. Thanks for listening.
If you guys want to send us a kind email about how you're using the compendium, or even do it in your favorite podcaster of choice, especially iTunes, and leave us a review, it goes a long way to getting the podcast out to more people who desperately need to hear us give this information. Yes, that wasn't a question. That was a statement. So go and do that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys so much for equipping the compendium today. If you're interested in diving into a different type of character development, consider checking out my brand new life coaching experience, the Identi-D&D Workshop. I handcrafted this experience using the framework of building a D&D character with some of the tools that I know as a life coach to help people do an investigation check on themselves and who they really want to show up as in life. As a special thank you, Compendium listeners can get $25 off this 5-hour workshop by using the code COMPENDIUM, that's COMPENDM, at registration. Just visit www.envisagelifecoach.com and click on workshops to learn more or register. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so that you're always the first to know every time a new episode is published. They come out every Tuesday and Friday, or if you're a patron on our Patreon account, every Monday and Thursday, since you'll get them a day early. If you'd like to learn more between episodes, you can always follow us on social media by looking up the Compendium, COMPENDM, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.